What does everybody want?
WFOD starts now.
Big fashion nights of the year took place last night in New York City. The annual Met Gala charity event, just for pure weirdness. It's Oscar winner Jared Leto with what appears to be his own severed head and that gown. He was dressed in a silk red Gucci gown with jewel detailing, holding the severed head. Mm-hmm. He's all set for Game of Thrones, seems to be.
And welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I am joined, of course, by my co-host, my partner in crime, the albino alligator, the king of pranks, popcorn bitch, Mr. Travis Hulse. Travis.
Pop, pop.
Travis, how are you, buddy?
Great. How are you doing? I'm happy to be on the other side of that 400.
What do you mean by the other side of it?
We're not on the front side of it in anticipation of it happening.
Oh, you mean it's like it's not, over? It's in our rear view. Is what
yeah,
you're
we're not in it. We're on the other side of it.
Guys, Matt is here as well. Matt, hi, Matt.
Hey, guys. I'm planning episode 500.
You get it going on it now. We got to get that schedule going.
Yeah.
That one's
schedule.
That one's going to be a 12-minute episode, right? I'll tell you guys. As exhausted as we all were after that 12th hour, I was like so exhausted. I was wired, so I had to like go upstairs and have another drink and watch an episode of Ash versus Evil Dead just to be like, all right, I can now go to bed.
Yeah. There was a weird. I crashed almost immediately, but I remember as I laid down, like there was this little bit of like tinge of adrenaline. But it wasn't enough to keep me up.
It was like the fourth wind kicking in.
I went upstairs and I checked my phone and I fell asleep sitting up on the couch, just like with my mouth open.
Before we go further, Mike, did you speed up the intro song?
No.
Why does it sound faster?
Well, you're on peyote or something.
Oh, okay.
It's the same. It's the not only the same song. It's the same file I use every single
week. It just sounded faster for some reason.
Guys, big show tonight. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking to professional wrestler Al Snow. He has a new book out today called Self-Help: Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. So pick that up on Amazon or wherever you get your books, Travis.
Where you get your books.
Guys, I had an idea, and I wanted to run it by you and see what you thought. I think I have an idea for a show that would be bigger than the Super Bowl, the biggest show of the year, Travis.
Oh, I can't wait.
We put this show on in prime time. It'll be the most DVR'd, the most rewinded, the most paused show ever.
So like American Idol at its peak.
We open a P.O. box and everyone can send in a picture of their face. And then for a split second, everybody's face will run on the show. And so then everyone will look for their own face. And that's the show.
So nothing's actually happening. You're just broadcasting.
No, just
people's
showing
faces?
A bunch of faces, Travis. Everybody's going to look for their face. That's the show.
I like where you're coming from with this because I know exactly why you think this would be successful. Because it's just like anything else where people love to hear their name on a podcast or in a radio show. They love to be interviewed on the nightly news, and they can be like, oh, they interviewed me about my prize winning cow on the news. You got to check it out at 6:30. I feel like there's got to be just a little something, like, not, it doesn't have to be a grand designed show.
Okay, here we go. Here we go, Travis. You want to know the grand design?
Yeah.
One of the people's face also has a little note on their nose that says, you won $1,000.
Oh,
did it.
Well, there it is.
There it is.
$1,000, Travis, will have the biggest show of all time.
And it costs literally nothing. We got to pay for a P.O. box.
I went to the St. Louis Cardinals game yesterday. And, you know, I'm guilty of it myself. Through the entire game, they're doing crowd shots. And, you know, there's people dancing like fools and people yelling, let's go Cardinals. And we do the kiss cam. We do all those things. And everyone is just glued to that Jumbotron, just thinking, is it going to be me next?
Right.
It's literally the only reason people bring like signs to sporting events.
And then everyone's looking at it. And when they go up, I mean, obviously they're looking at themselves on the screen. They're not looking at the camera. It's not a good shot. They're looking at themselves and cheering because, oh, look, it's me. I'm on the thing. Everyone sees me.
And it always starts with like a look of confusion. Like they're not sure if it doesn't register that it's actually their face. And then before they do anything, they have to like hit somebody in the shoulder and be like, hey, I'm on the camera. And that person doesn't get it right away. So they point to the camera. And just as they start to cheer, they switch the camera to somebody else.
Travis, I don't remember what it was, but in Clerks 2, Kevin Smith, I think he put all of his Twitter followers in the credits. Is that what he did?
I think it was Clerks 2.
I went and looked for my name. I did.
Did you find it?
I think I did. I don't believe I saw it in the theater, but you know, when I got that divved, I looked it up and I was in there. I was like, oh, look me. So I'm guilty of it too. I'm not claiming I'm not.
Yeah, I'm guilty of it. Anytime I back anything on Kickstarter, I'll back like comic books and things. And then you got like a special tier where you get like the hardcover version and your name in the credits. And I'll turn to the back page and I'll be like, yep, there I am. Kickstarter
there
backer.
There I am.
And then I'll put it on my shelf and never look at it again.
You know, whenever they were doing Kickstarters for like the films here in New England, that's always a popular tier, right? Is that you actually get like a producer credit or something along those lines in the film. Yep. And I never really understood that because I always thought to myself, like, it's not a real producer. Like you just paid them, you know, $500 and then your name's in there as a producer.
Well, sometimes that's all a producer is.
True. Yeah. I mean, that's true, I guess. But I don't know. I thought that was.
It's pretty sweet, though. You could start your own IMDb page based strictly off of the fact that you backed somebody on Kickstarter and got your name in the credits.
You know, we always on the Lotus cast, we had the guys from Provoked, that movie that they did, and another one movie that never got finished. But I think it was like they showed the movie in a couple theaters, like locally. And we got like a special thanks in the credit, which was kind of cool. He listed all of us in the final product, the edit, I guess, in the credits. That was fun.
Very nice.
You looked it up, Matt, and said, look me.
No, I didn't look it up. It just, we went to the movie in the theater because we broadcast live from the premiere. And right there at the end, there it was. Thanks to the guys from the Lotus cast.
Another observation I made at the baseball game last night, Travis. Have you been to a sporting event recently?
You went to a baseball game?
I did, yeah. Travis, when was the last time you went to a game? I guess you go to Green Bay Packer games, don't you?
Yeah, we were probably at a Packer game like this past winter.
When did we all decide that the only song we were going to play at sporting events was Seven Nation Army Forever? They played Seven Nation Army four times, Travis. There's other songs.
You gotta understand, there's big shoes to fill from that. Hey,
well, that guy, I think he was a pedo.
Yeah, but you can't play that. And that was the song at every sporting event. Like I think from beginning to end. I think they just turned the volume down, and then whenever they needed music, they just turned it back up, and that song was just continuously on a loop. Well, so,
I typically go to like NFL games if that's, you know, I mean, I go to the Brewers once in a while and our local like baseball league or whatever. But typically if you're in, go to watch an NFL sporting match, you're definitely going to hear turn down for what?
Turn down for, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's happening every single time and you, probably multiple times.
If you go to a Red Sox game, you know what song you're going to hear is that that their Sweet Caroline.
Da, of course.
Get some crowd participation with that one.
Yeah, no, that's a big one here. That's yeah, that's a big one.
Well, it was a good game, though. We saw like four dingers. It was a good time. And I heard Seven Nation Army four times.
Yeah, I haven't been to a major sporting event in a very long time.
But Travis, this television show, you think it'd be a hit, right? I mean,
I do because anytime you add that audience participation and the possibility of somebody seeing their name or face in said piece of entertainment, it's going to spot. That's why American Idol initially, I think, you know, obviously it had a couple of other key points that people tuned in for, but I feel like a lot of people watch that show because then they could go ahead and vote at the end of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like because they added that audience participation probably really propelled that higher than it ever had any business going. But yeah, I mean, I feel like if there's a little bit of content to the show, like I said, yeah, you can win $1,000. You have to have a semi-charismatic host that just presses the button where it flashes faces. And maybe there's even a contestant, right? Maybe you bring somebody from the audience and the second face flashes. They go really fast, but somebody presses a button to stop the faces from flashing in front of the screen for the second, and whatever one that they stop on, that's the face that wins that $1,000.
So every 0.6 seconds, you do a tenth of a second?
Yeah, a tenth of a second. And I feel you bring somebody in from the crowd, and you do this a couple times. So you have like a list of finalists, right? So say maybe you have to get it down to 20 people. So it's a half hour show. You bring people in from the audience. They hit that button when they and then that face goes into the finalists. And then the very last person to choose is choosing from the 20 finalists. So they're letting it roll and roll and roll and roll and roll. And then they hit the button, and that last face then wins that $1,000.
But how many people watch the Super Bowl? 20 million? Is it more than that?
More than that, I think.
A lot.
Yeah, I mean, well, millions and millions.
I think at least 1,500 people watch it.
Yeah. Like 1,500, you think? 1,500 people?
Yeah. Give or take.
And you show each one of their faces for a tenth of a second. And we just roll through them all until everybody's been shown. And then everybody just DVRs it and rewinds and pauses and rewinds and pauses, tries to find them.
I feel like we could also maybe make a little bit of money off of this too, right? So like if you send your face, your picture in, if you send your face in.
Well, I mean, obviously this is going to be a big advertising thing. Like every half hour of faces, we're going to have some ads. Probably less than a half hour. I mean, 15 minutes, right? 15
every minutes 5 minutes. We'll do like 5 minutes because if we do it every 5 minutes, that can be like the... that can be like the break. That's every time we pull somebody from the audience to hit that button. It'll be after that 5 minute break.
Progressive insurance, McDonald's, Bud Light. More faces.
Come up with a catchy name for this thing. Your face here, we'll call it.
Yeah, we open a P.O. box. We need a P.O. box and $1,000, Travis. That's what we need.
We'll get the $1,000 because the people who are sending their faces in also have to include $1 bill.
I like that.
Oh, there you
go. So it's everything's paid for.
Matt, did you see the list of the movies that Disney put out today? They put out a big list of movies coming through like 2027.
Yeah.
They said, hey, you're going to get five more Avatar movies.
That just got so much going on.
Matt.
It's insanity. It is insanity what they're doing.
Matt, does anybody give a shit about these Avatar movies?
I'll be honest with you, yeah. I want to watch the new Avatar movies.
Do you really, Matt?
Well, did you not like Avatar?
Here's the thing. We're probably all going to go see the Avatar movie because everyone else will pressure us into it. And it'll be a cultural thing. We'll have FOMO, right, Trevor?
But will we, though? The last one came out how many years ago? I don't know. I feel like they needed to put this out a little bit quicker if people were going to feel like this was a touchstone of our culture.
Yeah. Hold on. Avatar was pretty cool when it came out, right? Like, it was awesome graphics. It looked really cool for the time. And even now, like, you go back and some of it looks a little hokey and the writing might not be great, but it's still a pretty good watch. Like, it's a fun movie.
I haven't thought about Avatar since 2009.
You think about it every time James Cameron said he created one more sequel.
Yeah. But he didn't. He said, we're going to film 5 sequels all concurrently, and they're all going to be my best friends.
But I feel like that's motherfucker can do.
He's
now.
Great.
Now, he's with great. What he has. Like, if he could do that then, think of what those movies are going to look like now.
But, I mean, they looked neat. It was a shallow, dumb movie, Matt. It was a dumb movie. Avatar stinks, Matt.
I liked Avatar completely fine the first time I watched it, which was on the couch on like a Sunday lazy afternoon, and I saw it on like HBO or something. It was fine.
But yeah, I mean, for all the movies that you call fine, Mike, I think Avatar would have a lot more substance than...
Okay. Let's even say,
yeah,
Avatar was great. I'll give you Avatar was great.
I'm not even saying that it's great. I'm just saying that it is an above average movie.
When you left Avatar, did you say, man, I hope they make 5 sequels to this?
No, but
I need to see 10 more hours of Avatar.
I didn't want a John Wick 2 or a John Wick 3 either. Like,
you didn't?
No, I honestly would have loved, because John Wick is suffering from the same thing the Hangover did. Like, it's the same movie again and again. It's the same movie. It's just that we're going to up the ante bit more.
To be fair, The Hangover 2 was the exact same movie, and people still loved it, so they made a third one. And the third one was not at all like those first two, and it sucked.
The third one, like, forgot it was supposed to be funny. The third was like a heist movie.
It was so lame.
It just seems like they're just trying to do it again, but just a little bit bigger. And that's what John... I would have rather John Wick on its own was so good. It was like an original, fun, action-packed movie that came out, and then they were just trying to ride off its coattails, and I don't think that they... Like, I just would have liked another original, fun, action-packed movie rather than just the, like, let's just rinse and repeat.
You'll never get that again, though. Like, I think we've had this conversation before, is if they hit oil with one of these things, they're going to churn these bastards out until they can't anymore.
So just like a new original character named Johnny Quick, also played by Keanu Reeves, who also kills a bunch of people. But...
Right. I mean, Kingsman,
drives around in cars.
Right? Like, Kingsman was fun, original, cool, and then they had to follow it up with another one. It's like, guys, I think
coming out in February, man.
I feel like you need to tap out, though, right? After that second one, because even, like, the guys were smart. The 21 Jump Street was really surprisingly good, and they made a sequel, which was actually really
so
surprisingly good.
Crazy that they were able to pull that off.
Yeah, and the sequel was really good, and they didn't make another one.
Yet.
Yeah.
Well, there was talk that they were going to do a 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover, which I don't know who was smoking what on the day that they decided they were going to move ahead with that.
That sounds like something that Kevin Smith thought up of on his podcast.
Just really high one morning doing some podcast. And is like, wouldn't it be funny if?
That's what we'll do now, guys. We'll take struggling franchises and just mash them together.
I just feel like it's really premature for a movie that is as old. I mean, look what happened with like Anchorman and all these movies that waited so long to make a sequel. And I feel like it's really premature by Disney, even with the marketing power that they have, is to say, guess what? We're going to give you 5 more avatars because we know they're going to be successful and it's going to carry us. We're going to start it in 2021. And every other year, you're going to get an Avatar. And every other year, you're going to get a Star Wars.
But what's crazy is John Cameron is saying he's going to film all of these at the same time. So, I mean, let's say that trick when, like, they say we're going to make Green Lantern 2 weeks before Green Lantern comes out. And then Green Lantern takes a shit. And then they're just like, never mind. I mean, like, he's going to have all these movies.
Yeah. What happens if it bombs? And then it's like that Disney paid him millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to make all these sequels that are worthless to them.
Well, I think James Cameron fucking like he takes these big risks and generally succeeds. Like, yeah,
I don't remember the last time he failed at anything, really. The guy is an amazing filmmaker.
At the same time, like, okay. Let's say Avatar is bomb-proof to a certain extent. I mean, like, you know, like we could go so far as to say, like, to some level, even, like, movies like Justice League, where everyone groaned and knew it was going to be bad, but it wasn't a bomb by bomb standards. It was a bomb for expectation standards.
Right.
I think that's almost worse. Like, what if a Avatar movie comes out and is just sort of okay?
Where, like, it breaks even? It makes enough money to break even?
I guess it just depends on what the plan is, right? Because with Marvel, they've definitely released those movies that were kind of like, all right, that was okay. That movie was fine. You know, as long as it's surrounded by that one was really great.
But I'm not even talking necessarily about the quality of the movie. I'm talking about the box office, the hype, the money.
Yeah. Well, and they've made those Marvel movies they're all going to make money. And I feel like the ones that they're unsure of, they don't throw as much money. Like Ant-Man, I don't think they spent as much money as they did on, say, like Thor Ragnarok, right?
Sure.
And so I feel like Disney knows what it's doing in terms of where are we going to spend $300 million where are we going to spend $100 million. So I feel like even with Avatar, they probably said, hey, James Cameron, we'll give you this much money. And he's like, I can do it for that. And he's going to try to push boundaries like he did. I mean, the breakthrough with Avatar was the fact that it was entirely shot in 3D, in a 3D he created to get it out to the theaters. And I feel like he's going to do some amazing things with this. But going back to your original point of, you know, I didn't need to see a John Wick 2. I would rather see James Cameron do something else that's awesome.
Sure. Right?
Like, I mean, when he lends his talents to these different or creates these franchises, right. I mean, I feel like he's done I made enough money and he can do what he wants now. People are going to give James Cameron money. So why is he going to spend a decade plus making Avatar movies?
No, you want Jimmy taking big swings. Like,
it would be cool for him to say, you know what? I created this awesome world that is Avatar. Like, let me now go create something else. You know, this guy's responsible for fucking, you know, Terminator 2, Aliens. Like he definitely, it has a creative mind and knows how to put together an action film. But I mean, maybe he thinks this Avatar is going to be fucking the shit when he's done with it, you know, and maybe it will be.
Yeah. Time will tell.
It's a possibility. Maybe it's just like, with these studios putting these schedules out so far in advance, like even Disney, it's like, I know it's Disney and, you know, I went to see Endgame again on Sunday and all the trailers before Endgame there was like a half dozen huge budget Disney movies coming out. And it's like,
right.
But do you need, I mean, why do I need a schedule for the next 10 years from Disney?
And who can you thank for that? But fucking Marvel. I mean, Marvel was the one that like said, hey, this is our plan. This is our schedule for the next, you know, 8 years or whatever it was, whenever they released that schedule. And now, I mean, that catches on. Like, people love that. People like to look at that and go, oh, my God, you know, I've got the next 10 years of my life planned out as far as cinema goes.
Right.
Guys, what we need to do, we need to take a break. Right. We have Al Snow coming up in a few minutes, We're all very excited about that. His new book, Self-Help Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow, is in bookstores today.
I hope you still have a bookstore near you.
I don't. I think I do.
On Amazon today, guys. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you real soon, guys. It's time once again for the Hollywood Beat with your inside source, Drunk. This week, Drunk talks to Pitbull about his new film, Ugly Dolls, in theaters now.
So, is it insulting to be asked to play a character named Ugly?
So when you take the word ugly and you break it down, it's really you gotta love yourself. And that's what I love about this movie and being able to be, you know, Ugly Dog and also, you know, a little bit of Slick Dog.
Fuck yeah. Dolly!
Hi, I'm Mike with RazorsByMail.com, ready and willing to ship you 10 of our finest triple blade razors for the low monthly price of 35 cents. How can we afford to sell them to you that cheap? Well, it's simple. The transaction is a mirage. You're getting the product you pay virtually nothing for, and in return, we get something much more valuable, your personal data. That's right. We make our real money selling the only thing American corporations still produce, data on its customers. You provide us with a few minor details about yourself, and our nerds in the back office can use that to determine a whole bunch of very valuable information about you that we can sell to other companies. Neat, huh? We get filthy rich, and you get the closest, most gentle shaving experience you've had since you trimmed your first peach fuzz in junior high. RazorsByMail.com. As close to free as shaving can be, because you're the product.
StrangeLabel.com. Do you even lift, bro?
Hello. It's me. I was hoping I could pander to you in exchange for some retweets.
WFOT. Yo, it's Pharrell, aka Skateboy P. So check out
WFOT
right here, right now. Turn it the fuck up.
Guys, welcome back. We're live. Phone number to contact the show is 636-487-HAND. Our guest tonight is a professional wrestler whose new memoir, Self-Help, Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow, hit shelves today. Al Snow is here, guys. Al, how are you doing?
Mike, Travis, Beth, how are you guys?
Good, Al. What's going on, buddy?
Nothing much. Just was running a little behind, so I apologize.
Al, what...
Get to an area where I had a good signal so I can call you.
What great timing for the book to come out today, right?
It's been very fortuitous. You know what I mean? I mean, I've been very, very, very grateful, very happy.
I assume that your social media accounts have been blowing up with Jared Leto stealing your gimmick.
Yes. So a lot of people last night and even today still have been posting pictures and, you know, saying gimmick infringement and, you know, and I just write back, what does everybody want? And, you know, of course he loved the little head and things like that.
It's got to be amazing though, when you see that on the eve of your book dropping, to see your name is being used as a hashtag, and because Jared Leto like dressed like a fool at the Met Gala.
Yeah, I know. What was he thinking? I mean, come on. Well, I can't say anything. I've made a career, you know, carrying that around. So.
Well, and that the Met Gala, I guess everybody dresses in like Halloween costumes, and what is that whole thing about? It's
I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I know, you know, it's the whole representation of living art, and you know, which I get, but I think that
it's a living art thing.
I think so, but I also think it's for these celebrities, it's a competition, you know, because they make their livelihood on being relevant, and relevancy is a matter of how many people are talking about you right now, and you know, so they're all going to compete to see who can, you know. Did you see the chick that was walking around looking like a candelabra?
That was Katy Perry. Yeah.
No, yeah. She was a cheeseburger. Yeah. I thought.
No, I think she had costume changes, Matt. She brought multiple outfits to the Met Gala.
She had multiple ones. That's even better.
Yeah.
I actually got an invitation to the Met Gala.
Oh, you did?
Did you?
Yeah, I couldn't make it this year. I was going to go, but I had other things going on. So
you didn't have your Fifth Element cosplay ready to go?
I'm so busy, Travis. Episode 400 and all that.
I get it.
Yeah. Al, so the book is out today. It's called Self-Help Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. It's a memoir, kind of, but it's not really like billed as a memoir, is it?
Well, it is a memoir. I mean, it's just, you know, it's my life experiences. And quite honestly, the first, what I wanted for the title was how to take shit and make shoe polish and other life lessons I learned from wrestling. because quite honestly, that has, you know, who I am and what I've become is been a product of all of the lessons that I've learned and from the really unique and very different world that I've lived in and grew up in, because I basically became an adult in the world of wrestling. I was 18 when I started.
Yeah, and you, when you were 14, you saw it on TV and just said, that's what I'm going to do. And you just had like a singular focus with no backup plan.
Pretty much, yeah. That's still to this day, I don't have a backup plan.
Well, I guess at this point, you don't really need one, right? You've written the book. You're done, right?
I'm done.
I'm
going to start doing magic for the blind.
There you go.
Very good.
It's a weird paradox because
they love card tricks.
I think that good advice would be to have a backup plan, but you know, to have that singular focus and drive to succeed is probably the only way to get to the level that you got, to get to the mountaintop.
I've heard many different trains of thought from many different people. Some saying that you shouldn't have a backup plan because you're basically accepting the fact that there is a very strong possibility that you may not achieve what you want.
Right.
Yeah. I guess you'll pull your punches because you have something else you can go do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it never occurred to me that I wouldn't. I broke in at a very interesting time in professional wrestling that, you know, it was during that transitional period of where we were transitioning from the territories, the regional territorial system back. And a lot of people don't realize that we were going back to a national promotion because we had been there once before prior in the 50s. And then it had broken apart and went back to regional territorial promotions. And then
is that like a lot of high school gymnasiums and stuff, or is that?
But you know, that's a big misnomer because it was, you know, it's perpetrated a lot, I think, in part by WWE, that like they brought it out of the high school gymnasiums and all that. And nothing could be further from the truth, because if you actually go back and examine it, there were, you know, shows that were performed in high school gymnasiums, but the majority of them were performed in arenas all around the country.
Well,
you know, every major city had an arena, and I remember a story of Vic the Bruiser and the original Sheik were competing, they were running opposition against each other in Detroit, and the wrestling business at that time was so popular in Detroit that they had sold out Cobo Hall, which was 10,000 plus, and then had sold with the original Sheik on top, and then Dick the Bruiser had sold out the Olympia, which was another arena across town that was 10,000 plus, and they turned people away from both places and had them wrapped around the corners.
But what was the feeling of that when it transitioned, right? So it went from regional back to nationwide. Did you feel any kind of apprehension, or was wrestling on such like a rocket ship at the time that there was no way it could really fail by going national again?
It just was that there were fewer and fewer places for you to be able to pursue, you know, continued employment, you know, like, you know, with the territories active, the biggest thing that you can recognize today is that, back then, one thing is that you can work almost 5 to 7 days a week, and primarily almost all of the different territories. The other thing was that when you had your run in a particular territory, because you got to understand that you're a product, you're a brand, you're peanut butter,
right?
You're a brand, you're a car. When the audience gets, you know, the audience's interest wanes in you, then you can leave and go somewhere else, and you become a brand new product again. And reinvigorated and reinvented. And even if you come back and circle around 6 months, a year, 2 years later, back to that original territory, you know, you're brand new again. You're fresh. These days, you know, with it being a singular national outlet, a lot of, you know, look at WWE. A lot of those people have been, not knocking them, don't get me wrong, they're extraordinary, but you know, they've been on your shelf,
right?
You know, Randy Orton's been on your shelf for what, 20 some years now. You know, how many times can you see him? How many different things can he do?
Right.
You know, how many times can you wrestle the exact same, you know, opponents?
Do you feel like that's some of the appeal right now of why there's these different sects of wrestling, these independent channels for people to wrestle in outside of the WWE are starting to be picking up steam?
Yeah, and that was the same as what had happened again, you know, in the late 90s and the early 2000s when the wrestling business had started to bottom out for WWF at that time. You know, it started to create interest in other companies and other avenues like ECW, which, you know, brought them to a national prominence, and, you know, allowed the door for WCW to start to actually compete with WWF at that time.
Was that around when every wrestler was like a profession based? Like there was the surgeon.
It was shortly thereafter. So you have to understand too that even then, you know, the reason that football, baseball, and basketball have enormous audiences is because we've all played them as kids. That's why hockey has a larger audience in Canada than it does in the United States. More people have played hockey. That's why soccer is more popular all over the rest of the world than it is in the United States. And that's why soccer is becoming more popular and more prominent and more of an interest in the World Cup, is because more generations of young kids have been playing it here. Professional wrestling, physically, no one in the audience really relates to what we do on a physical level. The ring is made of steel and 2x8s and just a little bit of padding. And, you know, the remark that I hear whenever anybody actually gets in is, oh my God, this is really hard. So they all assume it's a trampoline or a mattress when it could be nothing further from the truth. And back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, you know, Vince had taken that probably a little too far with everyone having some kind of vocation, you know, when you had, you know, Duke the Dumpster Dozy and, you know, Isaac Yankum, to name a very ugly few, as far as, you know, but he was trying his best to, you know, allow the audience to relate to the person who they were, because that's all really a wrestling audience relates to, is who they are and why they're doing what they're doing, not what they physically actually are doing.
Al, a question I have, you mentioned it in the book, and I wanted to know how the whole thing worked. You were talking about how you were heating White Castles up on the engine of your car.
Yeah, only once with White Castle. I can't handle those.
I mean,
he had a sausage and spam and, you know, these Stewart sandwiches from the, you know, the gas stations and stuff.
Do you pull over to the side of the road and let it sit there for a while? Or, I mean, are we talking like it's sitting on the engine while you're driving down the highway?
You attach it with muffler tape and, you know, drive for a little ways.
And it doesn't catch any like weird fumes or anything? This doesn't seem hygienic. This seems...
Well, you got it in a, you know, you got a Boy Scout mess kit. So the mess kit's in two metal pans, and they have a metal strap with a wing nut that you close it up with, and then it's closed. So, you know, it keeps the engine fumes from getting in there. So.
And you also briefly mentioned,
very stale, you know.
But I feel like there has to be more story there. You briefly mentioned that a vengeful ex tried to frame you for murder.
Yeah, that was a big mistake, and that was, I've got more stories like that, but that are close to the thing, but not as bad as you have where. It was a bad situation and a lot of bad choices, and I take responsibility for my part in it. And,
were you like brought in for questioning? Did they really think you did it?
The police officer, the detective, showed up at my house and knocked on the door and introduced himself, and then proceeded to explain why he was there. And they found a car alongside the highway on I-75 and just north of Hamilton, Ohio, and the windows were busted out, and there was blood all inside the car, and they couldn't find her.
And a note, you know, that said Al did it?
I mean, there was evidence that she was coming to see me, and that her family had attested to that. And so I was under investigation from there.
I imagine that in your career and just kind of living the lifestyle, right, of a wrestler, you probably picked up a lot of interesting people like that along the way.
Well, you do meet a lot of interesting people, and, you know, you have a lot of interesting interactions and experiences. And as you get older, I mean, you start to realize, you know, your part and your responsibility in it, and the choices that you make, and, you know, and realizing that a lot of people are, they're drowning in life. You know, they see you as the light at the end of the tunnel, and they don't care if it's an oncoming train or not. You know, they're going underwater, and if they have to, they'll drag you with them.
That does seem to be something that you bring up, is that, like, in your earlier tenures in WWE, before you, like, really caught on, like, you blamed yourself a lot and said that you were kind of a bummer, and that probably played a part in, like, maybe not.
Oh, I blamed everyone else. I blamed everyone else.
At the time, but now in retrospect, you look back at it. Yeah. And see your own.
Yeah, I look back and see, knowing what I know now and having some distance, I understand where I made mistakes, and I could have, you know, I always tell my students, the people that are young guys and young women I train now, I'm like, you know, look to yourself, because you are the one thing that you can control.
Right.
You can't control anyone else in life, but you can control yourself, and you can control how you react to things. And you know, you can make that decision. No one, you know, the big myth in life is that someone makes you happy, or someone makes you sad, or someone makes you angry. They do behavior, and then you choose. You have the choice, the freedom to decide whether or not you're going to let it make you angry, or, you know, you can decide how it's going to make you feel.
Do you feel like this, this introspection and this these realizations, is that what drove you to write your story?
What drove me to write my story, quite frankly, was enough people continued to tell me that I had a story to write and that people might actually find it interesting, which I myself didn't think that was possible. And they, you know, but they just continued to have me and suggest that I do it. And so I thought, you know, I will, but I'm going to write it from the perspective of, one, I'm going to tell my experiences and I'm going to tell my story. And I'm going to try and be as honest and own and be responsible for what I've done and the choices I've made. And two, I'm not going to be dark. I'm not going to be bitter. I'm not going to try to be hateful. I'm going to try to, you know, show that I really, truly feel blessed to have gotten to do what I love to do so much for as long as I've gotten to do it. And I cannot be more grateful for every bad thing, every negative thing, every positive thing. None of them matter. All that matters is that I have gotten enough experiences, amazing, incredible experiences through the wonderful gift of being able to pursue what I dreamed of pursuing that now give me the ability to tell amazing stories that most people would never believe if, you know, and a lot of people still don't. You know, I tell some of the stories I tell in the book and, you know, to people and all the time, and they just start laughing and they're like, there's no way this can't be real. And I'm like, it is real. And, you know, and it happens all the time in the world of professional wrestling. And, you know, I'm very blessed. I've gotten to live an adventure. I've gotten to go places, see things, do things, meet people. I've been on 6 continents. All I have to do is fly to Antarctica, get off the plane, put my feet down. Now I've been on every continent on the face of this earth. You know, I grew up in a small Midwestern town called Lima, Ohio, in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, and I pursued a dream and I've been able to, you know, to go to Iceland and all over Germany and, you know, France and Italy and, you know, India, Japan, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico. I mean, you know, every state in the union except Alaska so far. Chile, the list goes on. And that's all because I've been a professional wrestler. I've gotten to go and see and do things that people only read about in books or see on the internet. I've been on like 5 different safaris in South Africa.
So do you feel like you've hit every touchstone that 14-year-old kid with stars in his eyes had when he said, "This is what I'm going to do with my life"? Do you feel like you've hit every one of those beats, and you think that 14-year-old kid would be proud of you?
That's deep, Travis.
I think that I have achieved the 3 goals that I wanted to achieve when I first got in the wrestling business. And quite honestly, they were to be able to make a living doing what I love to do. That was the goal, that I'd be able to do this and nothing else. Have matches and moments that people would remember, and make an impact on the wrestling business where people would remember my name. And, you know, in my opinion, at least, which is what matters because that you asked me.
Well, absolutely.
I think I've done that, you know, and there's still plenty more to do and there's still plenty more to achieve. You know, I bought OVW last year and, you know, I have always believed that my legacy in the wrestling business will be those that I've taught and given the abilities to pursue their dreams, and make the wrestling business better for it. And I would be happy if that were my only legacy. If I had no other legacy but that, I'd be thrilled.
Guys, the memoir is Self-Help, Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow.
I hope people will read it and enjoy it, and I hope that they see another side of the wrestling business. That it's not always this dark, gloomy, like I have this cross to bear because I became a professional wrestler. And you know, so many books, they all seem to come across that way. And I just wanted mine to seem like, you know, like what it is. It's just, you know.
So you think most of them sound like kind of regretful almost?
No, I don't think regretful. I think a lot of wrestlers want to over dramatize or make it darker, you know, because we're so maligned as a entertainment form of entertainment, as an art form of physical storytelling. We're maligned by the rest of, you know, entertainment of you know, which is absurd considering the amounts of money on a you know, that we have over decades, you know, as an entertainment business have been able to continuously draw. But we're still treated like the redheaded stepchild, you know, the carny version of entertainment, and when nothing could be further from the truth. And I think the performers inside of it are so desperate for mainstream acceptance and respect for what is done that they try to show the burden, the cost, of the wrestling business and its in the pursuit of it, as opposed to the quite honestly, guys, I can tell you, there ain't no better way to make a living as a grown man, because you don't have to grow up. You literally go out and, you know, there are the negatives, but you get to be a rock star, you get to be an action hero, you get to be a soap opera star, you get to be an all-star athlete on an all-star team playing in for the NFL and the Super Bowl, or for the Major League Baseball and the World Series, or, you know, you get to be all these amazing things. You get to be a superhero, your live action comic book character, all wrapped up in one night. And all you got to do is go out there and fake fight another man in his underwear for money. And you'd be amazed at how many of the guys in the back are doing nothing but complaining about the plight of their situation. And it's like, guys, you wanted to do this. You're the one that said, oh, I'll do anything to be here. And now you're doing nothing but bitching about it. This is awesome.
Is there something to that in everything, though? Because it seems like a victim is like to be the sympathetic character that...
You'd be the martyr. Yeah, you got to be a martyr. And that's why I think a lot of other, you know, not the other wrestling stories are great. I just think that a lot take that tact of I'm a martyr for doing it. It's like, you know what? I'm not. I'm lucky. Man, I could not be more grateful or more blessed or more happy or more thankful, or you name the word, for what I have gotten to do, see, and experience. And I'd be nothing but thrilled if 20 years from now I'm still doing it and I got even more ridiculous stories to tell people. And nobody else gives a shit or cares to buy a book or want to hear from me, I'll just sit in my living room and bother my kids with it.
Well, I got to say, it's a very profound thing that you've never lost sight of what you were able to do, throughout your career and continue to have in your career. And, that you'd never got jaded by the thing. And that's a real admirable thing.
Well, I think that, the older veterans, I think the reason they become bitter, that they become jaded, is I think they're jealous. I think that they're jealous of the next generation that are now living in that spotlight that they used to be in. And they're getting to do and live that high that they no longer can get, you know.
Well, I guess once you get that taste, you want to keep getting it.
Oh, it's hard. I mean, it's the most addictive drug there is. It really is. NFL, in fact, the NFL just instituted a program to teach its football players how to live a life off the field, you know, once their career comes to an end. And that's part of, too, why I've created, you know, we've got our provisional approval from the proprietary Office of State Education for the first ever wrestling trade school, so that we can teach these young people skills and that they'll be able to have a career and function once their in-ring career ends.
Wow.
Excellent.
So, guys, again, self-help. Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. It's on Amazon now. Al, what's the best place to direct people to get the book? Just Amazon?
I would say Amazon's probably the primary place. It's the best right now. It's hallelujah, thank Jeebus and Allah and Buddha and every other single person out there, that it is number one on the wrestling biographies. And
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really shocked and really surprised and very flattered and just ecstatic. I really am. But it's been well received, and I hope people genuinely just enjoy it, get a kick out of the goofy stories. There are a lot of really ridiculous stories. I didn't even have enough time to tell all of them. So there's
I can imagine. Yeah.
It's a volume two. I smell a volume two.
We'll see. This one took a year to put together, so we'll see about another one.
All right. Al, we appreciate it. We'll do it again sometime. Take care.
Yes, thank you guys very much. Have a nice evening.
Thanks Al. You too,
Travis. That Al Snow. I'll tell you what. I like that Al Snow.
Me too.
Good guy. He likes his life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that really does life. That does say something. You know, it's when you do see guys, you know, like I said, to him, jaded by, you know, successes and where they were.
Yeah,
I'm realizing what they had.
I'm reading the book and throughout it, like he's saying, yeah, this is, I was being kind of a dick here. You know, I was in the WWF and that was a big deal. And, what they would do is he would, like you'd go into Vince's office and Vince would be like, your name's Shinobi and you're a ninja. Go to wardrobe and get your ninja character. And then like he'd go there and they'd give him like he was a ninja for a while. Al Snow was a goddamn ninja named, what was his fucking name? He was a ninja guy for a while, Travis. And he wore like a ninja mask. And the whole reason was, Vince McMahon saw that Mortal Kombat was popular and that like people liked Scorpion and Sub-Zero. So they're like, yeah, let's have a Scorpion Sub-Zero. You're a ninja guy. And so Al Snow was going out there fucking being the ninja guy who had a mask on the whole time. And he was pissed off. He was like, dude, this is bullshit. I don't want to wear a mask. And then he was like, you know, in retrospect, I should have embraced my ninja character and been the best goddamn ninja I could be. It was interesting that he could look back at it and realize where he was kind of being a negative Nancy and learn from it. So
I want to hear a mashup of I've been everywhere, man. And then when they name all the cities,
Matt.
Him naming every city he's ever been
to. I was thinking the same exact thing when he was saying it. Guys, stay tuned after the credits. Guys, I mean, we did it, right? We did it.
Absolutely.
I think we did it.
It's a triumphant return on the opposite side of the 12-hour live marathon. We weren't sure if we were going to take a week off, right? Because we are exhausted, to be quite frank.
I think this technically counts as a 13th hour.
Yeah, it feels like we never stopped doing this. It's hopefully an entire week from now to the next show we'll make it feel like there's a little distance, but right now it does feel like I've been awake for like 72 hours.
Oh boy. So, Travis pick of the week, something you want the people to know about Travis pick of the week?
Oh yeah. Travis's pick of the week. My pick of the week is all the moms out there, right? Oh. We're creeping up on, old Mother's Day this coming Sunday. And, I feel like all those moms out there deserve Travis. To be all of our picks of the week.
Sweetie. Matt, pick of the week, Matt?
Pick of the week is, I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5.
All the Avatars, Matt?
Yeah. Matt's anticipation for Avatar is his own pick of the week.
Right. Cannot wait.
Mike, you got a pick of the week this week?
It's Al Snow's book. Travis, I know that's cheating, but I have been reading it, so it is relevant. Al Snow's book, it's in stores now, guys. I've had it for a couple weeks. I'm a big shot, but you guys can get it now. So Get it.
Buy it and take a picture of it and tell Al Snow that we're the reason that you got it from Audible or from wherever the hell you got it.
Is it on Audible, Travis?
I mean, I'll read it.
Right. Travis, I got an idea for... Oh, I hit... Oh, shit, I screwed up the song. Anyway, Travis. Travis.
Yeah.
Got an idea.
We take other people's books, read them, and put them on Audible for $10?
Travis, you stole my idea. Not all books are on Audible, right?
That's right.
It's probably because they're just too goddamn lazy to read it, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Some people can't read, as a matter of fact.
That's true.
We'll read your book.
Yes.
And then, I mean, we'll give you most of the money, but we'll keep some of it. All these people trying to fuck podcasters. How come we're not trying to fuck authors, Travis?
Yeah, and I feel like we just have to go ahead and record our audiobook version of it and just tell the author, hey, we made an audiobook version of your book for you. You don't have to worry about that now. Go ahead. We'll just take some of the profits and we'll call her even.
That's not a bad idea. Like, if it's already done, don't you think a lot of them will just be like, eh, okay. Oh.
Shit, we were working on that. Now we don't. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's already done. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
I'll email Al, see what he thinks.
Well, first, go ahead, email B-Rob and ask him how to get an LLC so we can create a company so we can start doing this thing.
Maybe we could just be under his umbrella.
Maybe the randoms?
Yeah, we'll just be part of Random Entertainment or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Guys, we'll do it again next week. Be on the lookout. There's shit going down. You know what I'm saying, guys?
It's going down.
Guns out, funds out, guns out, funds out, guys.
Bye.
I want you to know it's over.
Well. Bye.
Guys, thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. If you enjoyed it, subscribe so you don't miss the next one. Leave a review, tell a friend. You can also listen live every Tuesday night on Strangelabel.com. There's other programs on that network as well, all of which are worth checking out. You can interact with us via phone, 636-487-HAND. That is when we're live or when we're not live. Leave us a voicemail. We probably will play it on the show. You can email us, mike@wfodshow.com, travis@wfodshow.com, drunk@wfodshow.com, and believe it or not, yeah, actually, matt@wfodshow.com. We're WFO Dicks on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so be sure to give us a follow and let us know that you're listening. Special thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Brian Kranz and Liquid Lozenge. If you would like to become a Patreon sponsor, it's patreon.com/WFODicks. 20 minutes of bonus content every month for as little as a dollar. We appreciate you listening. Come back next week. Thank you, and goodbye.
Lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. The travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Iceland, Germany, France, Italy, India, Japan, Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, Chile, every state in the Union except Alaska.
I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, Deep Lake. I've been everywhere.